Great. Welcome to this Azure Automation introduction. Well, I know the title, I just had to remember which one it was. No, my name is Jakob Gottlieb Svendsen, and I'm a developer, consultant, trainer from Copenhagen in Denmark, working for a company called Cortec. You might have heard about it. If you want to read stuff about Azure Automation, other automation stuff, then I have a blog called theblog.cortec.dk/jgs. And of course, you can contact me on Twitter too, with the Twitter hashtag Jakob G. Svendsen. I spend all of my days in automation, and I have done that since 2007, end of 2006. So I've done a lot of PowerShell, of course, and a VB script and other kind of stuff, and a lot of Orchestrator. You might have seen some of my other sessions about Systems Center Orchestrator. Lastly, I'm also part of the Danish PowerShell user group, which we started a couple of years ago. So we try to have a little geeky group with people. And as I usually say to them, that nobody can see that you're a member of a geeky club on the street. They won't push you away just because you're a member of a PowerShell club. It's not visible to the normal public. But let's take a look at Azure Automation. Has any of you tried Azure Automation before? Well, one half hand, two hands, so that's good since it's an introduction, because that's the idea about an introduction, right? What about Orchestrator, the classic Orchestrator? All right, a few of those. I mean, when I started talking PowerShell, and we tried to set up workshops and courses in 2007, there was nobody interested in PowerShell. They were like, this GUI is great, everything is as it should be, and we like to create all the users manually and so on. But as you might have noticed, as the data center progresses and there's much more need for stuff to happen fast, it's a really good idea to have automation in there. So of course it's become much more popular, and a lot of people do PowerShell today. What about PowerShell? Do you guys do PowerShell? All right. So at least there is some that does it. I mean, there was years without any students at the courses because, well, it wasn't used, but it is today. What I'm going to show you is first an introduction to what Azure Automation is. Then we're going to take a look at what's called assets in Azure Automation. Then I'm going to talk about the different ways of authoring runbooks in Azure Automation. Then a little bit about converting Orchestrator to Azure Automation, if you have any Orchestrator stuff that you already developed. And then a quick introduction to the new features. Tomorrow I have a session called Azure Automation Deep Dive, which is more for the next steps after this. So there might be some more technical deep stuff in the session tomorrow, but this is more of an introduction to what's available. Just move this a little bit. All right. So, first of all, an introduction. The idea is to have an automation system that can run some code. And this code can be based on PowerShell. It's always based on PowerShell. But as you'll see, there's also a graphical interface to draw this automation. The idea about automation is, of course, to make life easier for us, to make our service is more reliable, so that when somebody orders a new employee, for instance, or the HR creates a new employee in their HR database system, then we automatically create a user, for instance, and we create their home folder, and everything is created in the same way every time. So this means that all the users will have the same values in address, for instance. They have the same way of writing how their department is, and so on. Another great thing is that a lot of help desk, they have some issues that happens very regularly. So they would get contacted a few times every day, and they need to do the same kind of simple task every day. Even worse, sometimes they need to call somebody in another department, like the second level support, and tell them, hey, you have access to reset this. Can you please click the button? And that's pretty annoying, both for the guys that sit and take the call in the first line because they can't do it themselves. They have to rely on another person. And the persons who actually have access to do this stuff, they probably have lots of other stuff to do, right? So therefore, using automation, we can also help helpdesk, for instance, in fixing stuff automatically so that they we can give them access to actually run this stuff either from a self-service portal so the user can fix it themselves or another portal, for instance, where the help desk can trigger this automation. Actually, I should have removed this one. Again. There we go. All right. So let's continue. The idea about Azure Automation is that we don't need to have a system running in our own data center anymore. All the stuff about database where we have all our Azure runbooks, all our credentials, all our values, all our results and logs and so on, they are saved in the cloud. But what you'll see later is that there is also possible for us to actually trigger it and run it on our own data center using what's called the hybrid worker. So there's a lot of features in Azure Automation, and I'm going to go through some of them throughout this session. First of all, what's been added in May is a graphical interface so we can actually draw these workflows instead of writing PowerShell. It can be very powerful in some use cases. There's also the hybrid worker and some other features which I'm going to kind of touch through this this session. Yep. So the future, as it looks today, is that they have one automation system. So instead of having different systems, they are relying 100% Microsoft in putting all their efforts into updating the Azure automation system. One of the reasons for going through a cloud solution is, of course, that they can release stuff quicker because they have it running in their own data centers. They don't need to have a lot of support for any kind of data center. They can run it in their own hardware. And this makes it possible to add new features on the fly. For instance, like 1 hour ago, one of my friends here, he said, "Oh, can you take a look at this?" And there was... He tried to run some runbook, but I just noticed that he was running on a machine that wasn't supported 3 days ago. So suddenly they had added a new feature yesterday to the product. So what you'll see in here is preview features. It's not complete yet, and they keep updating it all the time, so sometimes it might even change. I have a session tomorrow, as I said again, and well, if I'm unlucky, they have changed something, but of course, they usually change it for the better. What you see here is that what we don't have today, but what is planned for this system is, today we have the web portal where we can do all the stuff, and I'm going to access it in just a few minutes. What we don't have today is the access permissions, but it is on its way. So this means today, if you have access to your automation system, you have access to everything in there. So anything I will show you today, you cannot set permissions for one user to access some of them and another user for some of the others. But as I said, it's on its way. Of course, you can make multiple accounts, which I'm going to show you. We have the graphical interface. We have also text interface, PowerShell authoring. There's a gallery. And there will be this PowerShell desired state configuration support. I'm going to demonstrate PowerShell desired state configuration in my deep dive session tomorrow. Yep. What's really nice about this, having this system, is that it's highly available. So we don't need to worry about having multiple servers running all the time. We just need to worry about creating an account and creating our automation and running our automation. Of course, if we wanted to run in our own data center, we need to do some administration ourselves. There's easy integration from PowerShell or for a REST web service, and there's also a new integration called a webhook, which I'm going to introduce later. we'll get in, to it. First of all, in the portal here, we have the textual authoring. We also have graphical authoring, which I'm going to demonstrate both of them. When we have created some of this automation, we can test the runbooks. And before we publish it, we can actually make sure it works. And then when we know it works, we can publish the runbook. We have complete overview over all the jobs that have run. We can make, you see, actually this is a screenshot of the old layout, but as you can see here, we can have statistics and charts from the results of our jobs. There's also a runbook gallery where we can download already made runbooks. Well, there's not so many right now, but they will be added. Both, as I know, it will be both Microsoft and community runbooks. So you might be able to add some yourself if you want to. And then we have the hybrid workers, which enables us to run code in our own data center. I'm going to get into details with that one. Then the desired state configuration, it's been enabled, it's coming soon, and I'm going to show it tomorrow. And we also have source control integration, which is also on its way, which means that anything, any code or any runbooks that we put in here can be synchronized to our Visual Studio Online or GitHub. Yep. In the new portal, in the preview portal, as it still is, we have a completely different layout where we can see our runbooks, we can see our jobs, and we can see the results of our runbooks and so on. But I'm going to show it to you in just a second. First of all, when you want to start using automation, Azure automation, all you need to do is, of course, to sign up for an Azure account so you can log into Azure. And then you go to the new button up here, and you create, and you select in the management category, you select Azure Automation, an automation account. So you can make as many of these accounts as you want to, and I'm going to come back to what the cost is a little bit later in this session. So you just go in and create it, and you're actually ready to go. Let's take a look, before I go into the portal, let's take a look at the different options. Oh, actually, I'm just going to show the front page to you. So when I log into my Azure, the new portal, it kind of looks like this. I know if you have the default layout, it would have a map of the world, but I've changed it a little bit, so I only have the stuff that I really need. Up here, I have a link to my automation account, and if I go into my automation account, you'll see it looks like this. In here, you can see which subscription is from. You can see how many runbooks is there, how many assets. You can click the jobs and see the job results, as you can see here. There's a few of them. You can see this thing called the hybrid workers and also the DSC stuff. Down here, you can see the synchronization to the source control. And as I said, it's coming soon, but I've been allowed to show it to you. So I have so if you log in, you might not see these enabled. Actually, I should have gone with this URL. So you see, it would look like this normally, but it's because it's on its way. Yep. Well, let's take a look at the ways of authoring, and then I'm going to go into details in both of them. First of all, we have the textual-based authoring. It is PowerShell, and it's what's called the PowerShell workflows. So it means it's the same as SMA, Service Management Automation. So if you have customers or if you have used SMA beforehand, you can easily transfer whatever you made in SMA into Azure Automation. But it is PowerShell workflows, so it means that it is normal PowerShell. You can insert a copy of your script, for instance, in here. But you should know that since it's workflow, PowerShell workflow, there is some, I wouldn't call it limitations, but things that you need to know when you start developing it. There's a small changes that you need to make to a script sometimes, but you should be able to make any script that you have today able to make them run in PowerShell workflow too. The great thing about the textual interface is that it's a low-level language, so we can write any kind of PowerShell we want. So we can make it's very flexible. We can actually create whatever we want in there. Another good thing is, of course, as I said, we can reuse already used PowerShell scripts. For instance, I usually ask some of my customers if they have scheduled tasks running, and many of them say yes. And then sometimes I would ask them, do you know where all this stuff is running? And they would say, no, not really. Maybe. And I say, yeah, okay, you know where 90% of it is, but what about the last 10% that somebody who's maybe not even in the company anymore has set up at some server that you're not aware of? So of course, a very nice thing for putting stuff in here, already existing scripts, is that you have them in one place. They are in their cloud account, and anybody who has access in there can administer them and see where they are and get a complete overview of what has been run. Yes. As I said, the PowerShell workflows is a little bit different. So they look very similar to a PowerShell script, but when it's run, it's actually converted into what's called the Windows Workflow Foundation. And not really interesting unless you're a technical geek like me, but I hope some of you are. But what you can do is that it's a little bit different. It can, for instance, execute commands in parallel. So for instance, if you have a loop that has to check 1,000 computers, you can have it check 10 computers at a time to do it in a parallel instead of checking one machine at a time. Another very important thing is that it can persist state, which means it can actually save its current state into a database in the cloud and can load it again. And then you probably think, what should we use that for? Of course, it's because if something fails, I know if you make perfect automation, well, even if you make the perfect automation, something will fail. It always fails at some point, because this automation might connect to another server, and this server is down for maintenance, for instance. So what would happen in a classic orchestrator is that the runbook would fail, and it would restart from the beginning of the runbook, unless you made some very advanced designs, which you could do, but it was kind of hard to do. PowerShell workflow supports to suspend itself when you want it or when some error happens. So if some error happens, your runbook will not just fail. It will go to suspended state. And then you can check, oh yeah, that's right. That's because my Exchange server was down right now for maintenance. So when it's up again, you can resume your workflow from the position where it failed. So that's why one of the reasons why it's using PowerShell workflows and not normal PowerShell scripts. It also means that we can actually make a workflow that reboots the computer the workflow actually runs on, or if it loses network connection to where it's going, it can still continue afterwards. So it's much more rigid and much more robust than a normal PowerShell script. The thing is that not all PowerShell commandlets work in a PowerShell workflow because it runs what's called activities and not PowerShell commandlets. So commandlets will either fail or they will be automatically converted into an activity. Luckily, there is something called the inline script block, which you see over here. The inline script block, it actually, if you put that into your workflow inside this script block, it's a completely normal PowerShell script. So this means if you have a PowerShell script that you want to convert into a workflow, all you need to do is put everything into this inline script. There's actually a converter that you can download that does it for you. It's pretty simple. Of course, there can be other tricky things that can happen, but normally you would be able to do that. So that's why they use the PowerShell workflows. So when they released the SMA and the Azure Automation, it was only, SMA is still only textual based, and Azure Automation also was only textual based. So a lot of people ask for a graphical interface similar to what they knew from Orchestrator, the classic Orchestrator. This has been added, and they are still working on it, and it looks like what you see over here. So in here, we can actually drag and drop or insert these activities into this visual flow. And we can actually set them up using the GUI, which I'm going to show you in a few minutes. And we can make it run. And if you take a look at the design over here, the runbook over here, you can see there can be multiple links to other parts of, so they can run two commands afterwards. And you can also see the line that has that is not the it's the dotted line. The dotted line means that we actually have a rule in there where we can set if it should go this way or not. So we actually have the same functionality as we had in the classic orchestrator. I'll get into the details. First of all, when we log into our automation account, we have different resources. As I said, a runbook is a PowerShell workflow or a graphical PowerShell workflow. And of course, we can see those in there. We also have the jobs that we can check the result of. And since it's PowerShell, we have modules, PowerShell modules that we can use in our runbooks. And of course, we can add our own modules if we buy some or download some or create some. We can add them into these resources. There's also schedules. And schedules is a way of triggering runbooks at a certain interval. So a schedule, when you create a schedule, you select that the runbook should run every day or every hour. Actually, right now, the minimum is once an hour. Of course, you can then create more schedules if you want to, and make it run maybe every 15 minutes. That just requires you to create four schedules for the runbook. We also have the assets part, and this is also one of the most useful parts of having a centralized automation system, because the main problem always in developing PowerShell or any kind of scripts was, especially this last one here, to save the credentials to actually connect to all this stuff that we need to do. Of course, we could run a script as a specific user, and we could give this user access to everything. But you probably know that that's not the best idea, and in most companies, it's not even possible to get it. It would break all the security rules. So what we have here in the asset store is the ability to actually save these values into our system. So the credentials, for instance, we can save as many as we want, and then we can use them in our runbook to connect to the different parts of our systems. The variables could be something like, what's the name of our config manager server, or what's the name of the SMTP server that we need to use to send an email. And these are variables that then can be reused again and again in our runbooks whenever we need that value. And the same thing as credentials, we can put in certificates. So if we need certificates to connect to something, we can put them in here too. The last thing is something that they have added in here, so called connections. And it's actually a way to describe a combination of these three. So whenever they make a module, for instance, for a service manager or a config manager, they would make a connection type called a config manager connection. This connection type might include a variable called the server name and a credential to connect to the server. And again, if we want to expand it with our own stuff, we can create our own types of these connections. All right. Let me show you here. So when I log into my system, as I said, I have the overview here. And one of them is the assets store here. When I log in, I can just create whatever I want of them. For instance, if I want to create a credential, I click here, and I click add a credential. I give it a name. For instance, we could call it cloud admin. And I put in a credential for a user and a password. And as you can see, the password is saved encrypted, which means that it's not easy to access this password. I mean, since you can use it in your runbooks, in your PowerShell, any administrator will be able to see eller get this password again. But only the people who have access to actually create the runbooks. So if you have a production environment where only a few people have access to actually create runbooks and import things, well, then your credentials are pretty secure. If you compare it to in the old days where you either have to write it directly into a script in text, which was the worst way to do it, or you could either run it as a specific user. But as I said, that would require this user to have access to everything. Oh, there was already news. I'll give it another name, and we can create this. So you see the GUI in here is pretty simple. You can also go into the variables, for instance, and create a variable. We could call it SMTP server. Oh, server. When I create a variable, I can then select which type it is. If it's a date time, I get a date selector. But if it's a string like this, just an SMTP server name, well, I can just write my SMTP server in my test environment here, which is the domain controller. Another thing about the variables is that I can save them encrypted, so I can actually enable encryption, which means that I cannot go back in here and read the value because it's encrypted. Again, since we are able to use these values in our runbooks, we can still access them, but it only if we are we have access to actually create runbooks. In the modules, we have our PowerShell modules. There are some of them from the beginning, from when you create your account, and there are some that I have uploaded, for instance, my Twitter, or the SharePoint SDK, something that I added to for using in demos. Then the connection, as I said, connection, different types of connections, for instance, a SharePoint connection, and that this will require a SharePoint URL. You should select if it's an online SharePoint, and also a username and password. So this is a custom connection. All right, and let's get to the next part. So when we do text authoring, we can do it in the portal. There is an editor directly in the portal, so we can always access it, and since it's an HTML5, you can access it from your mobile phone if you want to, or your tablet. But working in a browser is not always the most efficient way of developing stuff. So usually people want to have an editor on their machine. For this, we can use the PowerShell ISE, but when we use the PowerShell ISE, we cannot access all these assets, all these credentials that I just talked about. So there is actually a new add-on, which is not released yet. It is, you can download it, but it's not complete yet, which you can install on your ISE, and you can actually access all your runbooks, you can access all your assets, and you can do all your development in here. You can also do it in Visual Studio, so if you have developers who works in Visual Studio, they can create them in Visual Studio, and then you can either upload them manually, or you can put it in a source control like GitHub, and then you can use the new source control integration when it's released to actually automatically have them placed in your automation account. Oops, wrong button. Of course, you can also use any other text editor since this is just text, but it doesn't really help you a lot. Yep. But if we just go to the next. Of course, when we create our text runbooks, we can actually access our we can access the other runbooks, we can access our assets from the GUI if we generate if we create them inside the web portal. Last thing we can do, which I'm going to show you in a second, is to test our runbook. So when we click the tester, it will open a similar window like this, and I can select first of all if there's any input parameters. This one doesn't have any on the picture, but they will appear in that list. And we can also set if we wanted to run in Azure or on one of our own hybrid worker machines. So we can do anything like starting, stopping. We can, as I said, set the input and run on hybrid. And in the output window, which you see the black window here, we get different messages. We have the top one says completed. That's the status message. Then we have different color codes for verbose messages, warnings, and errors. So the verbose messages, which is like the most detailed logging that you can get in PowerShell, is gray. And then if you have warning, they will be yellow. And if you have any errors, they will be this pink or purple color. You can actually close the window completely, and it actually continues the test. So it's not, it doesn't break if you suddenly lose the internet connection, for instance. Let me show it to you here. So if I go to runbooks, when I create a new runbook, I go to runbooks, and you can see all my runbooks in here. I can add a runbook using the plus button, and I can either import an existing runbook or that was not intentionally. Happens if you have it open for too long. But as you can see, if I refresh, gets back to the same place. Again, this is the preview portal. There's still work being done. New textual demo, we could call this. And I can select which type of runbook it is. I'll create a textual version. Come on. And unless the internet is acting up, should create the runbook. This is not something I usually experience. Let's just try and log in properly again. Right, here we go. It creates a runbook, and we get into this view, which is the editor. And as you can see, I can then write normal PowerShell language. For instance, I can write a parameter block to make an input parameter. I can make an if I want to. And there's actually also, as you can see, some type of IntelliSense, so I can actually get help in finishing my commands. It's not complete yet. It will get better. And I can, for instance, write something to the output. Like this is, we send in a drink name, and if the drink is water, then we can say you selected water, you failed, like this. It's for the networking party later, of course. So here is a very small PowerShell script, and if I wanted to use one of these assets, as I talked about, for instance, my SMTP server, I could go out here and I could actually find it, like variable SMTP server, and I can right-click and I can say add a get variable or set variable. So if I get this one, I can actually put it in to a variable in my PowerShell, and I will actually get this value from the store. But as you can see, you can also set the value. So for instance, we can set the SMTP server if we want to change it for some reason. Or you can use this variable for any other information that you want to save, so such as when did I last run, for instance, if you need that, or similar things. Yeah, so we can just go. So cool. Oh. So when I'm done, I can then click Save up here, and I can click Test Pane, and it opens the test. And I can either, and you can see my input right here is the parameter I made, and I can then type in, for instance, water, and I can start my runbook, and it will create a job. This job will then reside in a database for a short while one of these workers that are in Azure will pick up the job. That's what happens now. It's starting, and it will then run my code. All right. So when sometimes it takes a little while to start, it has something to do with the PowerShell workflows, and I know they are working on trying to improve this speed. Usually it takes maybe from within 5 to 10, or even in some rare cases, maybe 20 or 30 seconds to start. Yep. And of course it takes a while when you show a demo. Yep. But as you can see, this is the new portal, and we can actually see everything we have open here. If I go back to the runbook overview, you can see when it was last modified, who modified it the last time, which subscription is it from, and so on. We can also, as you can see here, there is a schedule button, so I could actually click this one, and I could actually run it on a specific schedule. Now it switched to running, so it should be complete very soon. And it should write my output that I just showed before. There we go. Anyway, the cool thing here is that we don't need to have any servers in our administration. We just create an account and we can create this stuff. So when you have tested and a runbook and it works, we can then publish the runbook here. Because what we have is actually, there is two versions of the runbook all the time. There is a published version. You see the status up here has changed to publish. And there is a draft version. So if I click edit now, I'm editing the draft version. I can make some new changes. I can test it again. And then I can publish it when it's complete. But if I do something wrong, I can revert it to the published version also. Like that. All right. Let's take a look at the rest here. The graphical authoring is is this system where we can actually create runbooks by using this drag and drop model. The cool thing about this is that we can actually visualize what's really happening in our runbook. My personal opinion is that this can be very useful for instance, if we have multiple runbooks we want to trigger, we have made these runbooks either in graphical or in textual based, and we can actually run them in a bigger scenario. This makes it easier to discuss the scenario with people who are not PowerShell developers, and it makes it easier to follow the actual workflow, what happens. Yes, let's just go a little, I'll show you that in a second. But we can insert these activities, and these are the blue squares here, and we can set up the name of the activity, we can set the input parameter, we can set a comment for the activity so that we can remember why we actually inserted it. This activity can either be a commandlet from PowerShell, or it can be a runbook, or it could be an asset, as I showed you before, these assets. Yep. Let's go to the demo, so you see it. So if I go back and do about the same as I did before, to add a runbook, create a runbook, but now I'll select a graphical runbook instead. New GUI demo, like this. Create it, and we get into the editor. And you see it's very similar to the textual editor I used before, but now I can insert different things from I can insert a runbook, for instance. This one. Or maybe we could even insert the runbook I just created. It was the new textual demo here. I can insert that to my canvas. And I can then configure the name of it if I wanted to. Select drink, I don't know. I can go to parameters. And then you can see my parameter that I created in my runbook appears here. And what's interesting here is that, what's interesting is that we have multiple selections here. So to set up a parameter, I can either select what's called the runbook expression, PowerShell expression. That's just text, you see. You can then write any kind of text. But I can also do some smarter stuff. For instance, I could go in and either take the output of another activity, or I could go in and insert an asset in here. I can also set it to nothing if I want to. Yep. So let's just try and make something here. What I want to do is a simple runbook that can connect to Azure and list my virtual machines. So the first thing I need to do is to add my Azure account, because this commandlet is always used in the beginning of Azure if you need to do Azure PowerShell. For this Azure account, I can then go in and select which how I want to set it up. And if you know PowerShell, there is multiple parameter sets for some of these activities or some of these commandlets. So I can either base it on a user credential, or I can base it on what's called the service principle. In this case, I'll select from the user credential, because this makes it possible for me to go in and select the credential from my asset store using the credential parameter. I can go in and select credential asset, and I can then select, for instance, it's not the cloud admin, but I have the Azure credentials here from my Cortec account. The next step I want to do is to get a list of all the Azure VMs. And you see there's plenty of stuff in the Azure module, but I add this to the canvas, and you see it appears here. I can now draw a line between these two. So this one will execute, and when it's complete, if it has an output, it will trigger the next one. Here I want to get the actual VMs. And in here, again, I can say parameter set. And for instance, so one of them is called list all VMs. So let's just try that one. Here we go. And we can now test it if we want to. Now it will, again, create a job. And we could wait for it to start and execute. We can also go back and do some work while it's testing if we want to. So I can get to the next step. All right, because I'll go back to the demo in just a second. Because what we have here is, of course, as I showed, we can insert the assets, commandlets, runbooks, or we can also insert what's called a junction or a workflow script. So a workflow script activity is just an activity where you can write your own PowerShell in it. So it's kind of the same as inserting a runbook, but you write it directly into this activity. The input parameters, as I said, we can set it to different values on the commandlets itself. But the runbook can also have input parameters, like I showed in the textual version of the runbook. So to create this, I can actually go into my input outputs in my runbook editor, in my runbook editor, and I can create these inputs. I can set them to be mandatory. I can set a default value and the different things we are used to in PowerShell. And as I said in the beginning when I showed the first example, is that you can have this dotted line instead. And the dotted line means, well, should I go to the next step or not? So when you have a dotted line like that, a link like the others, you can set a condition. And if you enable a condition, it will become the dotted line here. If you look up here, you unfortunately still have to write some PowerShell yourself. But I'm pretty sure that this is also going away at some point, so you can select the result from the last activity or one of the activities and decide if you want to go via this link or not. You can either use it as a pipeline, which means that if all Azure VMs outputs 100 VMs, it will trigger the next activity 100 times, like we are used to from the classic orchestrator. Or it can work as a sequence, which means it will always trigger the next activity one time, no matter if there is and result, or if there is 1,000 result, it will only trigger the next once. It's the same behavior we could do in classic orchestrator. So let me try and show that. In here, I go into my editor. Here we go. Input, output. I can then add an input. We could call it VM name, for instance. And it actually, you can't use spaces. So I'll just do an underscore. We can then select which type it is, if it's, again, if it's a number, for instance, or a string. If it's mandatory, yes, it's mandatory. If it wasn't a mandatory value, we could have a default value instead, where we, for instance, write in localhost or what we want. If I said it's a mandatory, it can't have a default value. Doesn't make sense. So now I created this input-output, which means that I can go to my get Azure VM parameters, and I can select another parameter set, because there is one that's called get VM by service and VM name. Great. So now we need to provide a VM name and a service name. Luckily, this is most of the time the same, so I'll just use the same input in this demo. In this value, I can then select a runbook input, and here you see I can select the input I just created. All right. Service name, I can again select runbook input, select my input here, and we can go in and run it. So when you use this command, get Azure VM, if you tested it here, I don't have time for that, but I have created one beforehand. If we run this command, get Azure VM, what I get is a similar result to this. And one of the columns here, one of the properties, is called status. So I could, if I want to, create a link that would only continue if this machine was in status ready role. Because what I want to do is only to stop the machines that are actually running. And you can see all the others, they were stopped, deallocated. But if it's ready role, it means that it's actually running. So I can do that inside my condition. And I can do that by using this, and just to put it a little bit down, this little piece of PowerShell that says the activity output of the get Azure VM activity. But you should notice that I did rename it. Oh, sorry, I didn't. That was in the first demo. But if you rename this to another name, of course, this name should be replaced, as said in here. I can then see the result.status should be equal ready role. So if I go in here and set the stop Azure automation, stop Azure VM activity, I can put that down here. I can set a link, and I can actually click the link, and I can create a condition. And as I said, I'm hoping that there will be a better interface here where we can select the other activities and select whatever the property is and what the value should, what the comparison should be. All right. And now there we go. And now I have some bug here. Oh, it's all right. Like that. Just zoom in a little bit again. All right. So now it should only continue if the role is stop, is ready role. I can then say, okay, I want to take something from the get Azure VM, and I want to use the stop Azure VM by an input. Here you go. And it can actually receive a virtual machine. But since get Azure VM was sending out a virtual machine, I can select this parameter. I can go in and say, okay, in this parameter, I want to insert an activity output. And it should be the get Azure VM output. If I only wanted a part of the output, for instance, the status, I could write that here. But in my case, I want the complete VM. In the service name here, I need to save first. Go to service name, I can go to my activity. Here we go, and there might be the service name in the output. Of course, I would need to check that beforehand. I could also, if I wanted to, go in and set the service name to the same input as before, the runbook input, and the VM name. Of course, I could reuse that. I would just want to show that you can actually use the output of an activity in another one. And again, in this demo, I'm using single commandlets, but this could be complete runbook. So you could have a runbook to create your user in Active Directory. Then you could have a runbook to create your email address in your Lotus Notes or Exchange, hopefully. You could have a runbook to create an incident or service request in Service Manager, and maybe another runbook to handle your Config Manager stuff. And then you could put them together in this view so that you can actually discuss it across the different teams in your company. Right? Yep. Again, this VM name. Oh, sorry. I need to open it again here. There you go. And I can set the VM name, for instance, AUAA11. And we can start the runbook, and it will go into my account, find my VMs. It will, if the VM is running, the number 11, it will then go in and stop it.
Can I have multiple conditions or multiple connections out of one activity? Or you showed it on the print screen, I think.
Yes, yes. I'm sorry I don't have it in this demo, but you can have as many. It's a little bit hard with this low resolution. It's not perfect for this, but yeah, you can have as many as you want. So for instance, let's say it was stopped the machine, then you could make one that actually started the machine, if that was what you want, of course. So I could insert another activity here, and I can just drag over there and create another condition in here so that it would say, okay, this should be if it's not equals ready roll, for instance, like that. So you can have as many as you want and have it, and if both of these conditions are correct, both of these will trigger. So you can actually make really advanced workflows in here. Yes, if you don't have a condition here, this will, if this has an output, this will always execute. So you can see the type of this link by default is pipeline. And the pipeline type, as I mentioned before, will only trigger if there is an output from here. So if we have no condition and pipeline type, this will trigger if there is an output. The other one, if the condition is okay, will also trigger at the same time, or not technically at the same time, but they run in parallel. So this will run, and then this will run, and then the next one, if I want it down here, will run, and the next one here, and so on. So they will actually run. Yep. So, whoops, I actually made a mistake. But what you can see in the output from a graphical runbook is, first of all, you have the status, and then you have the verbose lines again. And in this case, it actually adds when the activity is run. So you can see it says this activity started, this activity ended, and so on. I'm pretty sure that this has been recently added, and I'm pretty sure, if I'm guessing, that there. It's the beginning of maybe a visual view of how far the runbook has gone, because this says which activity is running, and this could easily be placed in a graphical view like we know it from Orchestrator. Yep. But I need to train you a little bit, because now you have seen me create a couple of simple runbooks, but as I said, there is a runbook gallery, so you can go in and click plus in your Azure portal. You can go to marketplace, management, automation, and then you have a list. And this is actually the complete list for a couple of days ago. So as you can see, there's not much now, but I'm pretty sure that this is going to be a very big library at some point. And hopefully for people like me who like to help in the community, and if you want to help the community, I hope that they will put in the option for both adding Microsoft runbooks, as these are, but also community runbooks, so we can help each other create some nice runbooks. The pricing, of course, it's not free. Well, it is actually free, a little bit, because there is two pricing tiers. So to get started and to work with this and to do a lot of testing, a lot of proof of concepts, you can easily do it for free. Because the free tier here, The pricing in Azure Automation is based on how many minutes your runbooks are running. So we have 500 minutes a month, which is actually a long time. I mean, I have a demo from yesterday, which extends a drive on a machine, a VHD, and connects to the machine and do different things, and it takes like 8 seconds. So to get to reach 500 minutes, I can do a lot of testing. So every single feature in here is working for free, so you can test it out. But when you need to go to production and you think maybe 500 minutes is not enough, you can switch it. You switch it to the basic tier, and now I've done it in euro. I know it's not Swiss francs or US dollars, or I did it in euro. And it costs, what does it say, 0.0017 euros a minute. So 24 hours. Actually, I forgot to change it from the Danish. Will actually end up, the result is correct, I just have a typo in the calculation. It will end up at a little over almost 2 euros for 24 hours. So, of course, it can be hard to judge from the beginning how much it will cost, but it will actually be, it's actually pretty cheap. Converting from Orchestrator to Azure Automation, first of all, if you can redesign and create your runbooks again, that might be the best solution. But it might also be the most time-consuming solution. I just need to check time. Yep. Because, of course, it's best to redesign and develop it properly. But what you can do is to use the Orchestrator Migration Toolkit, which is also on its way. Part of it has been released, which is these two. First of all, the first one, the converter, can convert an integration pack from Orchestrator into a PowerShell module, so you can use it if you created your own or if you paid somebody to have one created. Another thing is that all the standard activities from Orchestrator has been put in a PowerShell module, which you can use. And the upcoming part is actually a converter that can convert your runbooks, graphical runbooks, from classic Orchestrator to graphical runbooks in Azure Automation. And combine that with the standard activities modules and the other, they also release the activities for different system center products and all the other integration packs that Microsoft released for Orchestrator. Then you can actually have them converted and have them running in Azure Automation. But again, it's not the best, probably not the best way to do it. Actually, right after this session, there is a session with Pete Serger and Anders Bengtsson, which are also really good experts at Orchestrator, have really large long history behind them, and they will talk about how to migrate and do stuff like that in detail. So I will leave that to the experts in that field. Of course, there is a link here if you want to read more about this migration. Yep. The hybrid workers, I don't have so much time left. I'm not planning to demonstrate it in this session, but the hybrid worker, I'll demonstrate it tomorrow in my deep dive. But the hybrid worker is, as I said, when I started a runbook in Azure, they have these workers running in Azure. And one of them picks up the job. A hybrid worker is a worker that you can install on your own machines. So if I go to an overview here, is that we have the automation cloud up here. But what you do is that you set up your hybrid workers. I just want to show you. Mine are set up here. I have three in this account. I set up a hybrid worker on one of my machines. And then I add it to the system in a specific group, which means that when I trigger one of these runbooks in my tester or in a normal execution, I can select that I want it to run on a machine in group name Denmark, for instance. And I can add as many machines as I want from the Danish data center to this group. So this means that I don't need an advanced VPN between my data centers. I just need that these machines located in Denmark or Australia or US have a connection to the cloud, which is just the internet, so it's really simple to set up. All you need to do is to install the Microsoft Management Agent, which is also the agent that Scum uses, so you probably have it on some of your servers. You need to register it for the operation management suite. And when it's registered, it will automatically get the files needed to actually install this runboot worker. And all that's left then is to just to run a single commandlet on the machine that says which name it is, which endpoint, which token, and actually also which group it should be part of. And now and then it appears in there, and you can trigger your runbooks on it. So there was actually a change, as I said, yesterday, because because in the first version, you needed a standalone Microsoft Management Agent that were connected to OMS. So if you were using SCUM, which a lot of people are, you couldn't use the SCUM agent, the SCUM monitored machines as a hybrid worker. But we discovered today that it has been enabled. I knew it was coming, and they said it was come with, they were planning for the first week of September, but it seems it's already out there. I hope they don't blame me for telling. But it seems to be working fine, and now you can finally use your SCUM managed machines. The last thing before I'm finished is that you can actually on a runbook set a webhook. And a webhook is a simple form of a web service. So when you set a webhook on a runbook, you get an URL similar to this one you see in the bottom here. It contains a secret token, or this token which should be considered as a password. And all you then need from another system is to call this URL, and you can send data into the runbook, and you can start the runbook. This means, for instance, in my demo in Deep Dive tomorrow, I'll show you how from a SharePoint workflow can trigger this URL, start a runbook automatically, and then a runbook can, of course, send info back to SharePoint. This makes it very simple to connect it to systems like GitHub, so ServiceNow, could be any kind of cloud system that can use a standard HTTP post. It doesn't need complex login mechanisms because this is the actual access key. But I'll talk more about that tomorrow. So this was an introduction to the different parts, and there is a lot to cover in 1 hour, and that's why I have some more deeper demos tomorrow in my deep dive. And of course, if you have any questions, you can just come up here afterwards, and I would like that you would send your feedback so I know if it was good or bad. But otherwise, I'll say thank you for today, and that's about it.